Hari Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunatu Sahaviryam Vavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastama Vidvishavahai Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, page 22. Verse 20. I have never performed any real service for the Lord like Hanuman and others. I have only remembered the Lord sometimes when my mind was troubled. Because being a Shanta Bhakta, then that is their service, remembering the Lord. Right? So it's not a problem that that's what he's doing. But, you know, they always will say like that because someone else is, you know, doing something different that they'll consider special. But you are a devotee of Lord Vishnu, Narada might interject, and so you do deserve his mercy. Prahlad replies by contrasting himself with others, like Hanuman, who served the Lord actively. Even now, Prahlad says, I am only practicing meditation. I have not yet become proficient even as a passive meditator. Right? You know, only proficient enough that the Lord personally comes himself, right? Yeah. Narada might argue in return that fixing one's mind on the Lord is one of the nine methods of pure devotional service. Remembering the Lord's names, forms, and pastimes is on the highest level of self-realization in bhakti yoga. Because seva means devotional service. Prahlad should not use this word to deny that he has ever served the Lord. Prahlad answers this by characterizing himself as disturbed by material anxieties, a condition that automatically disqualifies him from nama smarana, rupa smarana, and lila smarana. Right, so he's saying, okay, even if I am remembering, the reason I'm remembering because there's anxiety. So, you know, just to get rid of the anxiety, then we're remembering the Lord, right?
Like karma kanda.
So then, like that, he's saying, therefore, we're not qualified for that name, form, and pastimes. Because at nishta, right, that's where then this starts. Now you become fixed in the name. That's why it's called nishta, because you're fixed in chanting. So the nama is there. Then from taste, then it's form, from sakti, his qualities, from bhavana's pastimes, right? So he's saying, I'm in anxiety. So he's putting himself in the category of the, what is it? Artha, right? You have artha, artharti, right? So the art, what is it? I can't remember which is which. It always seems to be backwards from what you think it is. And then when you remember it backwards, then you think it's backwards again. Yeah. So you switch it again. But whatever it is, he puts himself in that category that I'm only remembering because of anxiety. You know, insinuating that if there's no anxiety, I don't remember the Lord. But he's always remembering the Lord. It's when Narada Muni came, he was sitting in meditation. There was no problem going on. Like that. So he's always remembering. But he'll just say, no, it's because there's some anxiety, so therefore now and again I'll remember. Like that. Prahlad could be referring to this prayer from the seventh canto where he admits his suffering and prays for relief. O most desirable object, who are kind to the fallen souls, I have been put into the association of demons as a result of my activities. And therefore I am very much afraid of my condition of life within this world. Right? Because where we're born, that is according to our mentality. Right? Like that. But when you have these nitya siddhas come in, then they take birth in areas wherever it will set the best example and have the best effect. Right? So then he will present himself like a sadhana siddha. Right? Does that make sense? And then, you know, he'll have his other lifetimes before and everything like that. So like this the acharyas may do. So, yeah. So then he's saying, because I'm born into the family of demons, therefore, why would he be born into the family of demons unless there's something with the mentality? right?
Yes.
You know, because low birth means mentality is wrong. Yeah. But when will that moment come when you will call me to the shelter of your lotus feet, which are the ultimate goal for liberation from conditioned life? Srimad Bhagavatam 7.9.16. A further argument is also implicit here that remembrance is not the best form of devotional service, since it depends on the functions of the mind, which is subject to distraction by anxiety and other emotions. Right? Because he's saying, when I'm in anxiety, I'll remember. When I'm not, then I won't. Like this and that. But the whole point is you're engaging body, mind, and words. So it is the process. But he's making it seem like he's dependent upon the mind. That's affected by everything around it. So therefore, my service can't be that good.
It's like approaching God out of fear.
Not so much out of fear. No, it means what he's... In other words, another aspect was being... is that if you're doing smarana, you're dependent upon the mind. The mind's focus is dependent upon the environment and, you know, what's happening and your emotions and feelings. So he's given this indication that because even if you're saying, okay, I'm remembering the Lord, but it's so dependent upon the quality of the mind.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Does that make sense? But factually it's not. But you could say it, so that means you could say any of, oh, hearing or chanting, yes, but then that's, you know, you have to be able to be in the situation, be able like that. Padasevana, you have to have the paraphernalia like this, you know, archanam, then you have to have that kind of, you know, so you could always say that you're dependent, but factually he's not. But it's just
Yes. It's just
other ways of being humble. Right? So in other words, we should know is that then for our mind, when the conditions are right, then it goes easily. That's why the neophyte is very careful about the sadhana, what he does, how he situates himself. Because we can say, oh, we're not the body, Prabhu, that's fine. But we're not. Since whenever were we? You know? If I say, Zoom tape recorder. Oh, well, I'm not the Zoom tape recorder. You know, so if I say, you know, your body's tall. You know, it's like, you know, I'm not this body. Who said, souls are only the body if the bodies are tall? You know, like that. All tall people, actually, their body is the soul, right?
Hey.
Right?
Does that mean I'm self-realized?
I don't know.
You know
what I'm saying? But what we get into these things, but... Of course it's not. But the point is it's still dependent upon the environment because of our connection to it. We're attached to it. So therefore we function in that way. That's why the sadhana is always careful about one's situation and how one deals. Once one's liberated, it doesn't matter. But then if you're liberated and it doesn't matter, what's the problem of following rules? Because it sets example. Because no one else can do that. So the point is, if you're going to be liberated, no need to be here, right? You could just go somewhere, sit in the cave, and just, you know, remember the Lord. So being here, then, why not follow the rules? Therefore, the Uttamas take the position of the Madhyamas. You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, it will always be there. So, he's just using it from that sadhaka point of view, but then the mind's disturbed by what's happening. But then in reality, no, he's coming from the liberated soul, that his mind is not distracted. Does that make sense? But it's just, you know, ways of very intelligently presenting. You know, because here is, no, but you're always remembering the Lord. Yes, but, you know, it's dependent on the mind. You know, and then that's, in a sense, so... That's the point, is you can't really argue with Uttamadikaris. Because they'll always win. You know, that's the thing. Madhyamas may or may not, you know, and like that. And even if they lose, it still doesn't affect their consciousness. Neophytes have to be careful that if they lose, then it might affect their consciousness. If they're defeated, then, oh yeah, maybe,
yeah.
You know, like that kind of thing. But Uttamas is just, you get them in one way, you know, come out some other way.
Very pleasant.
Yeah, because there's no conditioning to block, you know, the flow of rasa. Because this is all rasa going on here with them.
Yeah. Well, we can understand that some jivas have lack of intelligence. They,
some jivas have lack of intelligence. What do you mean by some?
I mean,
I think you should put it the other way around, is that there are only a few living entities that have intelligence.
Yes,
means if they're within the 8 million, species of animals and other things like that, that's not intelligence. Okay?
Yes.
Within the 400,000, that's
human,
also not...
Human form.
But of 400,000 kinds of human, only some of them are civilized.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? And of those who are civilized, that means then they're following Varnashram. That's civilized. That's the definition of civilized. Like clean means you took a bath, so civilized means you follow Varnashram. Right? Then of those... then very few people are interested in self-realization. Right? Because they're following Varnashram, okay, that's smart, but still at the same time, it's still not going to give the benefit to the soul. If you're interested in self-realization, then the soul starts to get some benefit. But of those interested, very few practice it, pursue it. Like somebody, everyone has practice, he'd like to be a... whatever it is, great kirtaneer or anything like that, but how often do we do it? Like every time you walk by the harmonium, you think, yeah, I should sit down and practice. 20 years later, yeah, I should sit down and practice. You understand? So then those who actually get serious about it are less. Now, of those who are interested in self-realization, then very few actually understand that the soul is different than matter. And of those, very few understand that the soul serves of God. Those are the intelligent ones. Practical intelligence. But otherwise, starting from Varnashram, you could say, now that's intelligent. Right? If it's less than that, if there's some interest, if they have the innocence, they come in contact, they show interest, then that's intelligent. And then, in other words, anybody shows interest in God consciousness, that's intelligence. And if they don't, it's not intelligence.
I'm just trying to understand. For example, here in my world, you can see people who is very fortunate to get birth in the Holy Dham, but they are not intelligent. It's not practical or something. They just have very small mind on how to... it's not about education. They just cannot think.
Who's this they? How many people born in Mayapur?
I mean, local people, also the rickshaws. I'm just trying to understand.
So here, look at it. If you're going to say if they're intelligent or not, okay, let us just look at just another form of intelligence. Okay? Now, one form of intelligence probably tells the story of this older, businessman speaking to a younger businessman. He asked him, "Are you intelligent?" And the young man then checked his pockets. And the older man says, "What are you doing?" He said, "Ask if you're intelligent." He says, "Yes, if I'm intelligent, there'll be money in my pocket." Okay? So if we go by that definition, then basically everybody born here in Mayapur is intelligent. They're all making money. Right?
I don't know.
How are they here? How do they live here? Do they go every 6 months to the West to collect?
No.
So then that means they're intelligent.
It doesn't look like they really look for the absolute truth,
for the knowledge. See, the thing is if you want to be yourself intelligent, don't worry about the Mayapur Vasis, the Braj Vasis. Lord Chaitanya told Sanatana Goswami, don't worry about them. They got their own. They're in their own category. Do you know, to be born in the Dham, even as a blade of grass, you have to have done great pious activities. We're just getting some mercy from the spiritual master. We can come and spend some time here. Right? You ever read the blogs and the things that devotees write, the forums that they write here? What do they talk about? Are they talking about pure devotional service? Or they're talking about cornflakes. cornflakes, or the sign outside the door of the Bhagavatam classes, let's pick up the garbage. You know, but it's not about service to the Dom and this like that. It's about garbage is not good. We want to be make Mayapur green. It's already green. You know, we have to stop making it not green. So who's intelligent? We're saying they're not intelligent, but when 9 o'clock comes and people leave the temple, how much intelligence is there? You know what I'm saying? Why are people building houses? Because they just want to be in the Dom, or it's a, you know, they can do something with it. You know what I'm saying? There's people that don't live here, they're building buildings here. Why? Because you can make more money here than you can in the West, if you're smart. There's a guy here, when I came to Mayapur, he was a kid. He was a painter, painting walls. He owns the biggest building in Bamanpukur. Now you're going to tell me they're not smart?
Hello.
Yeah.
Hello, I've seen Prabhupada. He was a boy.
Yes. So, they're not smart? The Westerners are banging their heads against the wall to figure out how to make money. So who's smart and who's not? See, you can't, you want to go, if you go, okay, all these devotees come from all around the world and they come to Mayapur, but how many actually have full-time service here? Go ahead, knock me out. It's all the guys born here. You notice the building down there, the new building next to the temple, the building, they're extending it double than it was. There's 300 brahmacharis that live in that building. They're extending it so they can have 600. And they're all doing full-time book distribution. You go ahead, knock me out. How many whiteys are distributing books here in Mayapur? Okay, one.
I just think we did some books.
Some, yes, we all did some. But you understand what I'm saying? So the point is be very careful when you deal with the Mayapur Vasis. You don't know who they are, what they've done, and anything like that. How many devotees here like to follow Vaishnav things? Here, in your community there, do they not have Russian Christmas? Okay, so what has that got to do? So the attachment to this culture, then next life, where are they born? Okay, what if they don't really like following Vedic culture? How many do? They talk about not following Vedic culture, it's not important, you know, we can do whatever we want. Of course, they follow their own culture. Okay. If you're opposed to Vedic culture, then what's the perfect family to be born in where you're born not liking Vedic culture? The local Mohammedans. So, they're devotees. They can't not be devotees and born in the Dham. These are devotees that don't take seriously that there's an importance in following the Vedic culture. You understand? They're in their own category. So don't bring them up. Bring up all the ones that are here, the 3,000 that live within ISKCON, and how much are they doing full-time service. They hire karmis to pick tulsi, karmis to pick the flowers, karmis to do basically everything for the deities. And then if we can't go on the altar and just dress the deity and all that, and then everybody going, wah, then, you know, we're not going to do any service. Everybody could go out there and pick tulsi. How many devotees go and do something for the cows? They're taken care of by hired men. They could go there and do something for the cows. You know what I'm saying? They have this place, what is it called, Wada or something like that. They have cows. You know, the Chopati farm. They take care of it. They do everything. They don't have hired people. Unless they hire a professional to come in and tell them what to do, and then they do it. You know what I'm saying? So, don't look at the locals and say why they aren't intelligent. Why would somebody come to Mayapur and not do full-time service? Is this the rents are cheap or what? So it's the whole point. It's not even so cheap anymore. Does that make sense? So you have to be very careful, because that's what Lord Chaitanya told, don't worry about the Brajvasis. They do what they do. Does that make sense? Yeah. So you worry about yourself and your friends, where you have influence. Don't worry about others. At least not the Brajvasis. They're in their own category. Does that make sense? You know, your sadhana, what you can do with your sadhana. You know what I'm saying? It's like you're saying, they're born here, why aren't they Krishna conscious? Then you could also say, everybody's coming here, why aren't they Krishna conscious? You know what I'm saying? If we go by anya abhilashita shunyam, then how many are on, where's the standard? Does that make some sense? Yes, you have to be very careful. Don't worry about the brush process. Okay? Worry about the nivasis. You know, if you have influence, but if you don't have influence, why worry? Because there's such a wide range from those who are serious about pure devotional service to those who are less serious. Whatever you want, you can get here.
Even among devotees.
Yeah, I'm only talking about devotees. I don't talk about karmas.
It's like one from 1,000
seniors. Yes, so you seek out those ones. So there's 3,000 here, so at least there's three serious devotees. So Janani, us, and Pankajunga, that's two right there. You know? And Jagpatakumar's, you know, seems to be quite serious, you know? Like that, you know? It's like they tell him to take rest. He gets sick, you know, and then he goes out traveling. He gets better. Okay, so that's, he's a serious. And like that, there's more. So the proportion is better than 1 in 1,000. But still, seek them out. Don't worry about the others. What is it? Because worrying about it doesn't make you any more serious. Yeah. Okay. 21. You praise me because he caressed me and showed other signs of affection. But some consider such affectionate behavior merely a false show of Maya, and others just a display of his pastimes. Right?
False show of Maya.
That we're going to hear. Here Shri Prahlad's idea is that even though the Lord's displays of affection may be considered real, he's acted in this way is only to fulfill the purposes of his own enjoyment. Right? Prahlad thinks that Lord Nrisimha only pretended to care about him. Right? So Maya, it means for the Lord, Yoga Maya, but it's just, that's his own Maya. He's doing it for his own, on his part of the pastime, you know, and the way he's looking at it.
Yeah.
And, or at the same time, is it's just, you know, he's just, it's just how the pastime unfolds. So therefore, he's kind to the devotees, and that, you know, so it's just like, you know, like the how you say, the president goes out and shakes hands, kisses babies, you know, does the whole thing. But, you know, they don't care whose hand it is or whose baby it is. It's just that that's what you're supposed to do. Right?
Right? It could almost be kind of understood as a critique of the Lord.
Yes, but that's why he's being very careful about it.
Well, some consider.
That's why he's saying some, but he's not saying. He says some consider like some. It's just all it is to throw the argument off like that. 22. You regard those affectionate displays as natural symptoms of his love, but I consider them no more real than a dream. Right? Means because now they're gone.
Yes.
And he's just meditating. Yes. So meditation, technically, you could say, is on the platform of the mind. You could call it a dream. It's not, though, because if it's about the Lord, it is the Lord. And even if we accept them as real, they are not evidence of his mercy. In the opinion of Prahlad, an expert authority on the glories of the personality of Godhead.
The opinion of Narada.
Oh, in the opinion of Narada, an expert authority on the glories of the personality of Godhead. Lord Nrisimha's display of affection towards Prahlad arose from the Lord's intrinsic compassion. Because we know from the Bhagavatam and the story that that's what it is. One might argue that this does not mean that the Lord had any special feelings for Pallad, since he bestows his mercy indiscriminately on everyone, just as a fire relieves everyone near it from feeling cold. But still, Narad may counter, the Lord showed his favor towards Pallad. Pallad replies that he considers the Lord's mercy on him to be like a dream. In other words, it is as good as unreal. The Mayavadis say that the Supreme Person's merciful dealings are illusory products of Maya, but Pallad here says instead that the Lord's mercy on him was unreal in the sense of being short-lived, just like a dream. Right? If it's something you can do eternally, so if it only happened at a certain moment, then it's like a dream. Like that. Again, Pallad might be asked why he considers dreamlike a display of affection which is famous throughout the world, which many demigods, sages, and other reputable persons witnessed, and which he himself vividly experienced. Taking into account that Pallad's spiritual understanding was already fully awakened in his boyhood years, his saintly behavior and other exalted qualities are obvious symptoms of the Lord's great favor on him. Why should he try to hide this fact? Pallad can only answer that, yes, the Lord's show of kindness was affection was real, but it was not evidence of the Lord's mercy particularly on him. Pallad completes his argument in the next verse. Right? So he's just saying like that. The Lord truly gives it, 23, the Lord truly gives his mercy, saintly authorities believe, when he grants the right to render various kinds of service, a blessing he gives to such devotees as Hanuman. Nothing else counts as his mercy. Small displays of affection are not proof of the personality of Godhead's favor, Pallad says. But when a devotee becomes mature and has realized his eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord, the Lord gives opportunities to serve him. There are numerous examples of just more on the intelligence quotient. Is that there's a, I don't know, do you have it in Russian? The apple doesn't fall very far from the tree.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's a symptom of the intelligence of the community. There are numerous examples of favored devotees, among them Lord Ramachandra's monkey devotees like Hanuman and Sugriva, and Lord Krishna's Yadu associates like the Pandavas. Thus, Pallad tries to deny the validity of Narada's glorifying him as the recipient of the Lord's special mercy. He especially tries to deny the relevance of what Narada has described in text 7, Lord Nrisimha's having placed Pallad on his lap and coddled him as a mother coddles her child. Furthermore, Sriman Nrisimha performed his pastimes not to favor me, but to protect the demigods, his devotees, and deliver two of his eternal servants. Right, so he's saying it's all about everybody else. But, you know, that's being taken care of at the same time as he's taken care of. Is that
yes.
Yeah. But it is intelligent in any case, for whatever reason, that one is spending time in the Dham.
Yes.
Tell me that.
Yes.
So that's intelligent.
Thank you.
And then from there, then how much you can take advantage of that intelligence, that's then the individual's effort. So the point is one always gets benefit. Yeah.
In this regard, can we say that it's the Lord's mercy who can take advantage of this?
But you have to want it. That's the thing, you have to want it. If you want it, then it's available. But if you don't want it, then it's not available. Mercy. The Lord's mercy.
It's always available.
It's always available. But you have to want it. And wanting it means you're willing to make the effort to get it. That's the... So it's always there. You understand? So always there's these two sides. There's the side of that Narad Muni is giving here, right? From that, if you're looking at it from that, anything connected to the Lord, that's the Lord's special mercy. Right? Yes. And so anybody who is that, then you're going to say, it says the demigods look at the residents of, you know, Jagannath Puri, you know, or the Dhams like this, as all having four arms. So they see them that they're from Vaikuntha. Right? Now whether the persons there with the four arms see it that way, that's another thing. But the point is the demigods see this is special. Who has the four arms? You want names.
No, you
want addresses also, credit card numbers, social security.
Mayapur Yellow Pages.
Mayapur Yellow Pages, yeah, that'll do. It's a generic thing. So people who are in the Dham, they see like that. So you have that side, so then you can glorify everyone that way. But if you're going to start pointing fingers, then the fingers can point in every direction. So that's why you want to be very careful with that mentality. So it makes for a good long discussion. You know, so many people get involved and, you know, gets the bile moving. You know, like that, what do you call it? Digests all that shmitana, you know. That, you know, so it's, you know, so it works. But. So that's what you were having here is that we're looking at it from Narad's point of view, but for ourselves, we look at it from these devotees' point of view. That's the whole thing. So in others, we see what Narad is seeing in all these other devotees. But for ourselves, we see what those devotees themselves are making their comments. Yes?
Very often we hear pure devotees need to see this manifesting this very humble, mentality of not having any bhakti for the Lord, or even
like the story here. That's exactly. That's showing. Like Prahlad Maharaj, he's a Mahajan, but he's saying, "Hey, it's not about me."
So it's one of the elements is because being humble. One is in fact they really feel it.
They feel it. Because that's how you interpret the fact. It's just like this. Okay, let us say I give you 10,000 rupees. Is that a lot of money or not a lot of money?
A lot of money was about 1.5.
Yeah, okay. But on another level, if you want to build a house or maintain yourself for the next 10 years, it's not a lot of money. Right? But if you're just, you know, looking for some pocket change to, you know, you and your friend go to the restaurant and pick up some samosas, it's a lot of money. You know, that's a good, you know, couple of years worth of samosas, right? You know. Does that make sense? So the whole thing is what is the context in which you're looking at it? Does that make sense? So everything, it's the context that gives it its value. Right? Does that make sense? So here, Narad Muni is looking at it in one context. But the devotee then shifts the context, and so then it doesn't look good.
In this case, it's mediated the Lord, almost putting his focus
on. Yes, so that's what Narad Muni is saying. But he's saying, no, just occasionally I'm remembering the Lord. You know, and then only when there's some anxiety. So there's less anxiety now, so I remember less. You know what I'm saying? That's because he just shifts the perspective. What we can learn here is that just how the devotee then will interpret things in his own life. Right? It's not that we're all sitting there in the temple chanting japa like that, you know, while the panchatattva is open, and then when the curtain's closed, then you see somebody jump up and goes, yeah, now that was some good japa, you know, like that. I haven't, you know, I mean, that was like a world-class japa, you know, yeah, hey, yeah, go ahead, like that, you know. You know, is that what you get? No. So
there's always more and more. I mean, there's always...
Yes, it's always more.
More that we can give.
It's always ever expanding, so then whatever it is, you always feel it could be more. But what you're doing is what you're seeing here is we're going through these levels and more greater intensity of mercy. So it's mercy from the beginning, but it's just getting more and more intense as it goes. So all it is you're going to the devotee, glorifying him for his position, which is true. But because the devotee is humble, he'll point out another devotee that he, even though he's advanced, feels is advanced. So then compared to that devotee, he'll say, I'm not advanced. Does that make sense? You know, just like you got the 10,000 rupees. He'll say, well, I'm not advanced because that guy has a lakh of rupees. And he'll go, oh, that's nothing. This guy has a crore. And then he'll go, ah, that's nothing. This other guy's got, you know, hundreds of crores. You know, it'll just keep going. Does that make sense? So that's how you do. You go to a big businessman and say, you have lots of money. He's got somebody who, to him, has lots of money. And he'll say, no, I don't have much. You know, that guy, he has money. You understand? So what we're doing is just being taken through by this pastime. So it's not about the points that they're pointing out as their weaknesses. It's just we understand how we may have aspects of this that we don't get proud and have that culture of humility. But at the same time is that you're supposed to associate with those more advanced than you and meditate on those more advanced. So we see that that's what they're doing. So Prahlad Maharaj is thinking of those who are servants of the Lord and doing that personal service. Well, he just remembers. But he's the one who's perfected his life by remembering the Lord. Right? But then he'll say, no, it's the one who's doing seva. You know? That's the one who's...
It's a combination also.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It's like that with anything. You go with that, you know, our best kirtaneers, you go to them and you say, oh, is that great kirtan? You're the best, and you know, like this and that. No, I'm not. I just sit there and I just mechanically, like, you know, like that. I like nice tunes, so I sing it. But you know, but this one, now they have devotion. You know, and each one of them will point you to the other one. You know, so yeah. Does that make sense? Just how the Vaishnava... So that culture, because it's there, then this Sanatana Goswami uses this format. So we shouldn't get distracted by... Because if we'll notice, what's very interesting, all of our discussions, generally, are trying to work out about the problems they say that I'm not a devotee. We never really discuss the glories that Narad Muni says.
Yeah,
you know, and the importance of that. It's kind of like, yeah, of course, you know. But how come Prahlad has got this fault, you know? You know. You know what I'm saying? So it's just a matter of that it's the culture. And then from that you can go through. So you're just showing how the Lord's mercy is there on all these levels. The Lord's merciful to, you know, all the living entities. Like, it's raining, the trees like it. You know, he's giving his mercy. The sun's out, they like that, you know. The bugs always have something to eat. Unfortunately, it always happens to be something that we wish they didn't eat, you know, like our clothes or our, you know, the wooden frames on our windows or, you know, stuff like that, you know. So everybody's getting the Lord's mercy. But real mercy means that it's got to be connected with devotional service. But otherwise, every living entity is getting the Lord's mercy.
Yes.
But then when it comes to devotional service, now that becomes serious. Right? And then when the intent is pure devotional service, then that's even more mercy. Does that make sense? So like that. And then within pure devotional service, you have stages. Because you can have the third class pure devotee. Right? So then you have a wide range of devotees. Then you have second class pure devotees, first class pure devotees, prema, those on the level of prema, then those who are above the advanced levels of prema. You understand? So therefore you can say, so all of them are positions, but there's something more. You know, it's just like, Ramana, Lord Chaitanya talks to Ramananda Rai. Okay, what about this? And he said, how you say, following your duties of Varnashram to please the Lord, you know, like that. And then Lord Chaitanya says, that's external. He didn't say it's not devotional service, he just says that's external. Right? Because that is the form that you're engaging. And so the devotee says, see, we don't have to follow Varnashram, it's external. Breathing air is external. You know what I'm saying? Anything that goes on, that you do with the body, mind, is external. It's the intent, the devotion of the soul. Now that's the real thing. Does that make sense? Yeah, but then we'll say, oh, we'll reject Varnashram. No, it's what's the point of there? The point is finding out what's the primary aspect. And then the more and more deeper levels of that primary aspect. So we had the externals that you could see from, then we start getting into the internal aspects. So then Prahlad then is the first one with these internal aspects. Always absorbed in the Lord, you know, not wanting anything material. Does that make sense? You know, yeah? Yeah. Yes.
Even if he's internal relationship with Krishna, he's presenting the fact that he's not very advanced because he's external, like secondary.
From his point of view, he'll put it to that, because he'll say it's secondary because I'm in anxiety. That's why I think of the Lord, you know. So then, you know, that most everybody does.
Yes,
you know.
It's like it's part of humility.
It's just what we're just saying is he's changing the context, and so then he's in that way he sees that it's not that special.
But it seems that the dialogue...
Compared to some other devotees.
Yes. You see that Narada Muni is pointing the primary. You see the primary in the devotee. But the other one...
The secondary. Yes, you could say it like that. But at the same time is that we're starting off with the symptoms of the mercy. Mm-hmm. Right? So then the symptoms of the mercy, you know, then we see. Then they start with the... just being absorbed in the Lord, no anxieties, facilities there, knowledge is there, like that, enthusiasm is there, all these different blessings of the Lord, which are true. But then, with the devotion that's there, then it develops like that. So you'll see that with him. Prahlad Maharaj, he also has material facilities, but that's not what was brought up. Right? Because, you know, Sutala and that down there, they got more wealth than Indra, you know, so then. Like that. But that's not what's brought up. Yes.
Is it also that you remain enthusiastic if you keep putting yourself in this humble position, then?
Yeah, because whatever, if you think, if it's always it can be improved, then you're always trying to improve it. That's why this humility doesn't mean that it is lack of enthusiasm or lack of confidence, right? The point is they have full confidence in the devotional process, in Vaishnavas, in the instruction of Vaishnavas. They have full confidence in that. They'll just say that I'm just not very good at taking advantage of that. Right? So that's different than the mode of ignorance where I'm so useless and this and that, or, you know, does the process really work, or, you know, why are these things happening? So they're very fixed. They're just saying, you know, if you're dealing, comparing your devotion to unlimited, then there's always room to develop it. But because it's connected to Krishna, it's perfect no matter what it is. But it's just the devotee wants to do more. So. Yes? We should not glorify new devotees. Why is that?
I hear that if
And the person who's saying that is? You understand? So why did they come up with that as a decision? I'm doing service for them. I don't glorify them. I don't respect them. I don't, you know, take care of them. I don't do anything because they might get puffed up and fall down. That's called uncultured. It's not that you sit around just praising. It's that they do something nice. You say, that's good. They do something not nice, and you point out how they can improve it. This idea is that this is impersonalist kind of philosophy. Jnanis, that, you know, if we don't do anything, then there'll be no material entanglement. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, and then we're also looking at it from the pride that my glorification is so good. You know, it's the cause of fall down. You know, it's like, there's a theme. It's not really coming. I don't know how to word it, but you know, it's like a. You know, it's like Helen. You know, it's like, you know, she they wage wars over her. You know, or stuff like that, or. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just a. Yeah, it's just. Does that make sense? So we should be very careful about this kind of things. People fall down all the time. That doesn't mean that we don't do our part in, you know, in encouraging and dealing in Vaishnava etiquette. Because why is it that this Western, pessimistic, somewhat educated kind of idea that that's somehow or another the perfect platform to perform devotional service from and view the world from? Why is it that that's the good one, you know?
Because we're not very good at relationships.
Yeah, because we're not good at relationships. You know? Otherwise, we might use more of a Disney kind of perspective.
Disney.
Disney
world.
Now you just have to find another word for Walt, right? You understand? Why don't we have more of a idyllic? Why it's always pessimistic? You know? Because we think the material world can be perfect. You understand? That's why Prabhupada used to use, battle analogies, though they're absolutely, totally, you know, politically incorrect nowadays. But that's the fun part. Battles are a political thing. And political correctness is a purely political thing. But somehow or another, that's the Krishna conscious spiritual, and the other one is, oh, so. You understand? It's a war. So therefore, if people die in a war, are we shocked? If we're sitting around and always shocked and, oh, we won't do anything, then what happens? You know, they heard you in the bus and you end up, being liberated by your work. Can't quote the German, sorry.
What about that? So much devotion, we think of all the things.
Okay, but then... how is it that we are the self-acclaimed, you know, generalissimo of, you know, knowing what is, you know, real Krishna consciousness and what's not? We have to go by what the acharyas are. Okay, have you ever noticed in Prabhupada's books when he writes in the front, there's acknowledgments. Who gets acknowledged? Some of those devotees, they were brand new, been around a few months, and they're written right there, immortalized from the next 10,000 years in Prabhupada's books. You know, that one devotee, Prabhupada showed him some basic beat, like Tere Keta or something on the Mridanga, and the person is absorbed in trying to play it. And Prabhupada, unknown to that devotee, is just standing there and listening and so happy. You know? You know, they're trying to learn this, you know, traditional culture and music for Krishna. You understand? So, where does this come up? That where does this come from? This is all pessimism. You know, of course, you have to be careful how you use what you say to who. That's culture. But to just write it off, no, we shouldn't praise anyone, shouldn't this, we shouldn't that. We're just saying that because that's what we would do as a karmi anyway. You don't hear someone that's from a cultured background that's gentle, deals nicely with everyone, speaks nicely to everyone, you know, receives everyone very nicely, and they have this mentality. No, those that already have this mentality, they're saying they're just falling back on their own conditioning, and then they're trying to claim that this is spiritual. Does that make sense? Now, if you're teaching someone, you encourage, but you don't too much. Otherwise, they get proud and think, I know everything. You know, says, you know, you cook something, yeah, that was good, now we can do this. And as long as you're doing that, they learn. And in the context of those who actually learn and get somewhere, everybody in the world who's a real teacher knows that's how you do it. And if you constantly praise them and this and that, they never get very far. But that's because you're directly responsible to see to their development. But the comments, what you're talking about, that's just a generic thing that, you know, don't praise anybody, don't be nice to anybody. Why? Because you don't want to get hurt. This person fell down, that person fell down. What are they worried about? Are they worried that that person fell down and now what's happened to the spiritual life and all? They're worried about, you know, oh, I've been cheated. They, you know, they're lying, this and that. It's all about themselves. And then they just hard-hearted. They don't want to be hurt. Oh, I gave my faith and then they cheated me. What do you mean? They gave you Krishna consciousness. They took it as far as they could. You know, you get on the bus to go to Calcutta, it breaks down halfway. Oh, they cheated me. Oh, these rip-offs. Oh, these nonsenses. It's get real. Get real. And the gutters of the West are basically, except for a handful of devotees, are from. Not from. Like that. Then, you know, just that they hear something about Krishna, get contact with Krishna, whoever can help. That's the meaning of taking gold from a dirty place. But I'm so, you know, special that everybody's got to be squeaky clean. If everybody's not, you know, up, you know, all the facts are laid in front of me that I can make all my choices, which is all a lack of trust. This is not truth meaning Krishna. This is truth meaning mundane gossip. And mundane, protect my own backside, my own emotions. That makes sense. Though it's extremely popular, especially amongst means generally amongst those who have a college education, you know, but not going beyond, just that their the graduation or part of that. They're the ones that'll talk like that. If they got less than that. You only got a high school diploma, then you're generally practical. If they got beyond that, then they speculate. They go into other aspects of God. It's just that middle group, the middle class, middle educated, middle everything. They make these kind of middling statements that are not cultured and not practical. The rich are cultured and practical, the poor are practical, and amongst their own group, culture. It's that middle group that they don't have any loyalties, they don't have any, they don't have a culture. And the fun part is, every culture other than that culture has a name for that culture. Uncultured, but I'm saying, like, from your part of the world, then the general term is called gringos. Right? Why? Why gringo? Just because they're white, so what? But gringo because they don't have loyalties, culture, they don't know how to deal, you can't trust them. It's all about themselves. That's the meaning. Otherwise, the guy's a nice guy, you know, you don't call the white guy gringo. You call him gringo because he doesn't know how to behave. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, is that it's not culture. So we have to be very, very careful about this.
How do you interpret somebody who criticizes me is my friend, and somebody who criticizes me is my enemy?
But that's how it means. In other words, we are not looking for praise, and if we get criticized, then we're benefiting. We're benefiting. It means you have the thing. One, it keeps us humble. But here's the really fun part. Okay? The fun part is if one devotee criticizes another devotee for something and they're not like their teacher and they're trying to train them, but you just criticize, then you take on their bad qualities like that. So you actually purify them. You understand? Because when you speak badly about someone, it's as good as, you know, killing them. So they get purified. So now if they are humble and just stay like that, they're purified. But if they get upset and then criticize back, then they get it all back. You know, so they just sit there and, you know, keep trading, you know, bad karma, right? You know? That makes sense? But that's how it works, because you're talking about it, so you associate with that, so you take on those qualities. But if you glorify, then you take on those qualities. Yes. So do we see what's interesting here? Just as a general note, like that, is the first couple of years, most of the things are, you know, can I, you know, how you say, function in the material world, and I can still be a devotee and still, you know, it's all that. It's all economic, basically. Right? That's the first couple of years. And now is that with this is coming up, this whole thing about, you know, God's involved in everything, you know, from the Bhagavatam, and, you know, and then here is about this whole thing underlying about the, you know, the culture. So that's because the form of the culture was discussed in the first 3 years. You know, what Varnashram looks like, what the duties are, who does what. But now it's more getting to the mentality. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Interesting, yeah. Huh? Yeah. So then we get all this going, then when it starts, then it'll get good. Is that?
Yeah. So it's a lack of faith in the process, basically.
A faith in the process, it means any devotee has a, you could say, a fundamental faith in the process. That sometimes details are not sure of, or some experience didn't work out good for them. And but the overall there, it's always there. But then that's why the culture is important, because the culture then makes it run. It means we have a concept of what religion is, yes, and we expect everything to be nice because it's religion. But the point is the difficulty, the perspective is everybody else has to follow religion, but I'm the one that, you know, everyone has to understand why I didn't. You know, but the problem is if it's a society of sadhakas, that means each and every one is that. So you have to look at it more like a hospital. You can't claim that I'm the only one that can be sick in the whole hospital. You know, what am I doing here? It's just full of sick people. Yeah, but these are the sick people who are getting healed. You go out on the street, they're just sick. Right? So that's the kind of thing. Is that it's yes, mistake going on and this and that, but that's from not understanding, not following, not applying. But the process is perfect. If we follow it, we get results. We don't follow it, we don't get results. Mm-hmm. Anywhere in the world you go, you actually go out there with people who are convinced of it. You go out, do simple preaching programs, distribute books, do Harinams, meet people, have programs, invite. It always works. You make devotees, it expands, everything develops. You don't do it, it doesn't happen. And then we think there's another process. But we haven't been given another process. This is the process we've been given. So we use it, it works. We don't use it, it doesn't work. Like that. Even other groups, they take what we do, and they're successful. Like, you know, if you want to have fun on YouTube, go in and type in kirtan. And then you see how many hits come up that have anything to do with this kind. Before it was kirtan meant Hare Krishnas. Now kirtan means everybody else.
What to say to some devotee that when we try to train about this cultivate like very culture for the own children? But they say this is artificial because...
It's artificial, so being a Malecha and Yavan is natural. So what? So do they teach their children to eat with forks and spoons? Children just smear it all over. That's natural. They pass stool and urine everywhere. That's natural. Whatever they want, they cry if they don't get it. And when they get it, they're happy. That's natural. So does the parents leave them like that? So then what does they mean by natural? Or artificial? Artificial means I'm a Malecha by culture. I like it that way. I don't like this Vedic stuff because passion and ignorance is my thing. And this mode of goodness stuff is so far beyond my cultural conception, I can't even relate to it. It's like being in third grade and someone comes in. You know, you bring in a professor from a university and they start teaching advanced aspects of quantum. That's what Vedic culture is to those who say that. Anybody who says it's not natural, it's because... Does that make sense? It's not an argument. Human being means you follow Vedic culture. You don't follow Vedic culture, you're not human. Simple. But that's why Prabhupada says, this chanting Hare Krishna, even a dog can do it. That's us. We're the dogs. Yeah, so, you know, yeah, that's what we used to say. Yeah, cage, you know, put them on tight, yeah. Leave marks. Yeah. So, that's the point, is that devotional service, being independent, it's despite our lack of culture, lack of faith, lack of etiquette, that it still has some effect, though it's slower. If we would take it up, it'd be natural. So it's like this. What do you call those in society, we're talking Western society now, who use their brains... You know, and that's the commodity that they use, and they get paid for that. What are they called?
Intellectuals.
What do you call those who work on the government level and see that the country and, you know, the communities and all that work nicely?
Cheaters.
That's another thing. Administrators. Okay, what do you call those who do business?
Businessmen.
Yeah. Okay, and what do you call those who work for someone else? Okay, now if they work in an office, they're called a white-collar worker. If they work at a skilled trade, they're called a blue-collar worker. Right? And then, you know, then you have artists. So what there is not the same as the Vedic culture. It's just that they don't want to do what an intellectual should do, what a kshatriya should do, a vaishya or a shudra should do. That's all. So you have a concept that people who are in the West, that are unmarried, that there's certain standards they should follow and they should get educated and not get too crazy. Right? Okay, they dabble around a little bit, but not too much. They shouldn't be partying all the time and not getting educated. Right? Now, married people, then they are responsible, they have families, they do, and they're free to do as they like. As long as they don't, you know, bother their neighbor, you know, leave his donkey alone, right? Does that make sense? Okay. And then there's the concept that you have those who are retired. Right? And there is a concept, though it's not so much of a mainstream thing now, it was if you go back some hundreds of years, that there's a monk who's renounced, lives in monasteries, that, you know, they do the things, they know the rituals, you can go to them, ask questions, they can tell you, you know, they may come out into the community, preach.
Interesting thing is that when I go to the West and people hear I'm a monk, they get very interested. So it's like there is a need. It's like he is missing. The monk is missing.
Yeah, yeah.
Even though they don't think about it.
Yeah, yeah, no.
But he's there. It's like, wait.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's the people don't have a problem with monks. I mean, other than us. But everybody else, they're cool with monks. You know what I'm saying? So what's not, all it is not scientific. That's all. So all we're saying is make it scientific. Making it scientific means adding in the mode of goodness. That's the rub. It's the mode of goodness part that no one wants to worry about. So now, the big deal is not if you're following all this nicely. The big deal is that we're humble. If we're not able to follow, we're not able to follow. I mean, it can't relate to the cleanliness or can't relate to the diet or the clothes. But then that's a weakness on our own part, that our attachments and like that. That's honest. And then, who's going to bother you? But if you're proud and say, no, we're Westerners, we do this, we do that, why do we have to do all this Indian stuff? Then what's the glory in that? No glory at all. You know what I'm saying? So it's like you go to church. You know, do you show up in your Hawaiian, you know, shirt and some shorts and flip-flops? No, you wear, you know, some of the best clothes you have.
Sunday clothes.
Yeah. Yeah. Sunday best.
Yes, Sunday best.
You understand? It's just standard. People know. You go to a formal dinner, what do you wear? Like that. You will show up in your, you know, t-shirt and you know.
As long as you wear the black Crocs.
The tie. Okay? You understand? So all these restrictions are there, but where are they? Are they on the common street level? No. If you get right down on the street, they're there. Right? Because if you're part of the gang, you have to have the right tattoos, the right clothes, the right everything. You have to be respectful. You have to follow orders. You know, you have to be loyal.
You initiated.
Yeah. You get initiated. Yeah, it's a whole, you know, like that, you know. It's a, you know, eternal commitment, you know, like that. So. You understand? So they have laws, and when you go up to the society, up in higher society, there's a law. So the only ones that have problem with the laws is the middle class. They're the ones that really have problem with the laws. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the difficulty. Because it's something that's more temporary than the others. It's always the emerging middle class. They still call it the emerging middle class. But it's been emerging for the last, you know, hundreds of years.
They never really come out.
Because they get too far out, then they fall off the edge of the earth, and then the next ones have to come out.
Yeah, yeah.
Does that make sense? So that's the difficulty, is that we have to be very, very careful, is that that's why what the acharyas say, that's what we have to do. You know, so what Prabhupada mentions in his books, that's what we should, how we should be looking at. To try to understand the intent, the purpose.
Is it that in times of peace, the lower class emerges as the middle class, and then they become proud, and that's what actually gets them?
Yeah. Like that. It's just if there's peace and stability, then people can find more ways to make money, and whatever money you do have, there's less, you know, tragedy that you have to spend it on. So there's more affluence. And then as soon as there's instability or things like that, then again it divides. Then you get the rich get richer before you get poor. Like that. And then when there's peace, then again the middle class comes out. So there's always going to be, if there's stable, it's just like the Romans. In the beginning, there was the common person, and there was the, you know, the people on the level of the nobility. But then, like around Caesar's time, then you had a middle class coming out. You know, so then that comes out, and then there's a, you know, so the same, you know, anytime there's a thing, France, then you had the bourgeois coming out. But why is that? Because there's a pretty stableness. Otherwise, it wouldn't be there. And otherwise, you just have nobility and serfs. You know, that's, we're not talking about, you know, Waikiki.
What an interesting mix.
Yeah, find out that. That was why they were called serfs, right? Because whenever they weren't shoveling cow dung, then they were out hitting the beach, right?
Catching the waves.
Yeah. Is that okay? It's interesting. Is that philosophically it goes along, and then they can call guys. They'll catch up quick. So all these balances we have to try to get done before the 10th Ganta.
Yes.
Okay. Where did we get up to? 25. We read 25, or we have to read? Okay. He also wished to uphold the truth of the words of Brahma and of others such as Brahma's sons, and fully display the greatness of devotional service. These were the only reasons for his pastime. The personality of Godhead, like you see, is Indra was saying that Vamanadeva, he only does all this because his, my parents, now they're devotional, and they prayed, he came. You know, I'm fortunate. I just happen to be in the same family, but it's not about me. You know, you say, "Oh, Vamanadeva is your brother," and this and that. It's just, no, he's actually the son of my parents. I just happen to be his brother, right? So same thing here. He's saying, no, he's coming for Brahma's benediction, and you know, he's even talking about Jai and Vijay. You know, he just came to associate with his and liberate his devotees. Like that. So, you know, it's all about Hiranyakashipu, not about the law. That's the way he's looking. The personality of Godhead assumed his amazing half-lion, half-man form to save Prahlad from Hiranyakashipu, the most terrible opponent of Lord Vishnu's devotional service, right? Because there's no bigger demon than Hiranyakashipu. He is the demon, right, you know? Isn't this evidence enough that he favors Prahlad? No, Prahlad replies. The Supreme Lord's appearance as Mishringa and of his deposing of Hiranyakashipu served other purposes. The Lord enacted his pastimes to protect Indra and the other demigods, who are his faithful devotees, right? Because they are devotees. So you're looking at from this point that he comes to, you know, so he establishes everything so the devotees can do their service. So the demigods, their devotees, do their service. Right? So that aspect is there, and the Lord does do that. At the same time, he also makes the point that it's actually those devotees that it's about affection. Because technically he could get rid of the demons through his external energy. Right? She's Kali. She's time. Time kills everybody. Right? You know? Nobody survives time. Right? You know? Like that. Wow. Serious rain and wind. He also descended in this form to free his two Vaikuntha associates, Jai and Vijay, from the curse of Shanaka and his brothers. In addition, the Lord felt obliged to fulfill the words of several of his devotees. Brahma had predicted the Supreme Lord's appearance as Mishringa. Brahma's sons, before Kumara, predicted the Lord's killing of Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyakashipu himself, who is an incarnation of Lord Narayana's doorkeeper of Jaya, had also made statements that the Lord had to make true, and Narad's and Prahlad's predictions also needed to be realized. Getting serious. a detailed description. Okay, so, right? So he's just, so what is, so here's another way you could look at it. Is Nard Muni's come and praise them? The devotee, right? Mm-hmm. The devotee, he just praises other devotees. Right, he'll just make light of what he said about himself, and then he'll praise other devotees. So it's not about just being humble. You know, it's not like the typical, you know, brahmachari game. You know, oh yeah, you're sir. No, I'm sir. Oh, but I'm sir. You know. So this is not, you know, Monty Python. You know, who had the worst life? You know, exactly. You know, this is that you're making light of what they say about yourself. And then you're using the opportunity to glorify other devotees. So, in other words, what Narad Muni is doing is what they're doing. Right? So that's the natural thing. So, glorifying the devotees, that's the thing to catch. And making light of how people may appreciate our own, then that is... Does that make sense? Yeah. A detailed... Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, it's not like, okay, so, you know, you did this and that, you know, so this is fallen. Yes, I'm still fallen. See, he admitted it. He's fallen. You know, it's just... Is that, wait a minute here. This is not what we're talking about here. You know. Like that. A detailed description of how Lord Nrisimha had to fulfill the words of his various devotees is found in Srila Sridhar Swami's commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam 7.8.17. Quote, to make true what was spoken by his servants. When Hiranyakashipu asked Pallad whether his Lord Vishnu was also present in the pillar of the palace, Pallad answered, yes, of course. He is present everywhere. Lord Nrisimha emerged from the pillar to fulfill this statement of Prahlad, and Prahlad's previous statement, Srimad Bhagavatam 7.6.20, that the Lord is, quote, also present in the varieties of material creations and in the material elements, end quote. This personality of Godhead burst forth from the pillar in the terrifying form of Nrisimha to dispatch Hiranyakashipu quickly and thus fulfill the request of the four Kumaras that Jai and Vijay be reinstated in their positions in Vaikuntha after only three births in the material world. Right? So it means unless you dispatch them, how do they take the next birth? Right? Because if it's up to Hiranyakashipu, he's going to live, you know, until the end of the life of Brahma. You know, he'll still be working on something, but anyway. So, these are also there. That's what Rupa Goswami mentions in Nectar Devotion, that Krishna, by performing one activity, he actually fulfills many, many things. And he gives example that he just walks into a crowd of the devotees, and all these different things and exchanges are going on between all the devotees that are there. So each one thinks Krishna is interacting with me. Right? We also see that in it's brought out in, Krishna coming into Mathura, coming into Dwarka, Prithu Maharaj, when he comes into the city, right? Just how they're able to relate to each one. Yudhishthira Maharaj, when he goes to visit a place, when they went to Varanavata, right? Then they first went and met the city leaders. You know, because they're the ones running the place, so they're respected, the Brahmins, and all that. And then first the Brahmins, then the city leaders, then other prominent citizens, like that, and then whoever wanted to meet them or interact. So these are, you know, it's just part of the culture. So Krishna's doing all these things. But of course, the real reason is Pallad. Right? But all these other things are there too, because everybody else in the equation, they're all devotees. So therefore, from that platform, then he's doing it because he's devotee. His is doing something, requested something, is having some problem. Is that anything? Lord Nrisimha's form, neither human nor animal, was like nothing ever seen before in Brahma's creation. And he appeared at the doorway of Hiranyakashipu's court. This unprecedented appearance fulfilled Hiranyakashipu's choice of benedictions from Brahma. Bhagavatam 7:35-36. O my Lord, please let me not meet death from any of the living creatures, living entities created by you. Right? So that means Brahma has created all the 8,400,000 species. So technically in his view there's nothing outside of that. So that means there's nobody in any of the species that could kill him. Sounds clever, right? Either indoors or outdoors. Right? Yeah. Right? From either men or beasts. Brahma had answered this request, so be it. Hiranyakashipu later said, I can see that this boy's street is unlimited, for he has not feared any of my punishments. He appears immortal. Therefore, because of my enmity towards him, I shall die. Or maybe this will not take place. You know, he's hoping. Yeah. But he can see, so that's Bhagavatam 7:547. So you can see that there's something special because he controls the universe. And this boy's not afraid of him. You know, Prabhupada gives an example. He just raises his eyebrows when the demigods are quaking in fear. And Prahlad, and that's just an eyebrow. Here they're actually trying to kill him and he's not afraid. So he can, and he survives. So that means there's some extraordinary power here. He's from beyond. So that's what he sees. And because of that, he can see this is going to cause, you know, can cause his death. You know, but then, you know, he says, or maybe this will not take place. Hopefully. So that shows he's not in control. He just likes to...
Rama has a similar kind of mood.
Yeah. No, they all do.
Yeah.
They all do.
So funny.
And when... And when Indra had wanted to kill the unborn Prahlad in the womb of Hiranyakashipu's wife, Narad had warned him, the child within this woman's womb is faultless and sinless. Indeed, he is a great devotee, a powerful servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, you will not be able to kill him. Right? So even if he wanted to try, it wouldn't work out. Srimad Bhagavatam 7:7:10. And then he'd feel bad, so it's better he stop now. You know, just like Narad Muni, I think it was Ravana. Somehow or another came across him, and in the discussion, Ravana got upset, so he pulled out his sword and tried to kill Narad Muni. Narad Muni's body is spiritual. So even though he attacks him with a sword, it just goes through him because there's, you know, there's no... The material and spiritual don't meet. You know, so he, you know, this, that, trying everything like that. And then afterwards, Narad says, you can't hurt me like that. And so because you haven't... So there'll be no reaction for, you know, you're attacking me. You know, and that you would hurt me because you can't. But there's a reaction from wanting to. Right? Because it's impossible, but you should get one for wanting to. And so then Narad Muni, he also gave a curse. Like that, you know, another one on the pile. All these words had to be fulfilled by the Lord, and the Personality of Godhead also had to fulfill his own words from Bhagavad Gita 9:31. O son of Kunti, declare boldly that my devotee never perishes. And 12:7, I quickly deliver my devotees from the ocean of birth and death. Okay, so perish actually means not being situated in devotional service. Right? That's the real point, because If you're a devotee, that's real. That's life. If you're not a devotee, then that's perishing. Though the business of the parish is to give life. Therefore, Prahlad concludes that whatever Lord Nrisimhadev did during his short appearance does not prove that Prahlad is the Lord's favored devotee. Even though the Lord made a show of neglecting Brahma and the other demigods by showering affection on Prahlad alone, that display should not be taken to indicate the Lord's true feelings. Otherwise, as Prahlad's logic goes, one could infer that the Supreme Lord has no affection either for his Vaikuntha associates like Garuda or for the Goddess of Fortune, whom he also neglected on that occasion. Lord Nrisimha only wanted to draw attention to the greatness of pure devotional service by showing that even a demon like Prahlad can earn the Lord's reciprocation by steadfastly meditating on his mercy in the face of all dangers. So he's looking at it that the Lord is just showing that, yes, this is a bona fide path. Yes. So here's an example. So therefore he's putting himself, instead of being from the personal, he just puts it into generic. This argument is Prahlad's answer to Narad's statements in text 7 and 8 that the Lord Nrisimha showered special affection on Prahlad while, quote, ignoring Brahma, Shiva, and the other demigods offering prayers, and even ignoring the goddess Padma, end quote. Right? But he's just saying, no, he's just showing that this is what goes on. You understand? So he's just changing the context. But you'll see immediately once this is done, then he's going to glorify what devotees he finds inspiring. Okay. Thank you. Sorry. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nityananda Gaura Premananda ki.